sessions, there were several activities, and those are just summarized in that report. But if you read it and you get interested in some of the details, if Ken lets us know, then before we're done this week, I can get back to you on some of those.
Excellent. Well, let's move ahead then on the cross-media program.
Okay, this would be at tab 7 in your DEQ book. And I do have one handout I'm going to give you. I'm going to start by talking about the Community Solutions Team, which is one of our cross-media activities, and I thought this might be helpful. Basically, as I said in my agency overview, cross-media is kind of an archaic term, really meaning cross-program. It just means that there are activities that include aspects of air, water, and land, and so we refer to them as cross-program. And on some of the activities that we have included in this are the Community Solutions Team, which is probably the one with which you're the most familiar. The Pollution Control Tax Credits, of course, those cover all of our programs. Pollution Prevention covers all of our programs. The Green Permitting Program. The activities associated with persistent bioaccumulative toxics in the environment. And then, of course, sustainability. I thought I'd start with the Community Solutions Team. It is the only cross-media activity for which we have a policy option package, and that policy option package is policy package 150 on page 445 of your big budget book. And the handout that I just gave you was just kind of a...
I have a quality complaint. I don't have a section.
Oh, my goodness. Are
you the
only one?
Program.
Oh, wait. I do.
It's a very little section.
You've just already taken it out and thrown it
two
away.
Pages.
Right,
it's only two pages.
Okay, there it is. Then I have...
They're stuck.
There should be a one-page...
Oh, there's a one-page thing. Okay, and then a yellow sheet. I'm on board.
Okay, great. The handout that I just gave you, I just wanted to remind you or maybe tell you for the first time, if you didn't know, where this Community Solutions Team thing that you hear about so much came from. It actually originally was an executive order, and it was based on what I've handed out to you, which are called the Quality Development Objectives. And the concept behind it was that the five state agencies that get involved in communities who are trying to do, if you will, quality development, this is a set of principles that those five state agencies ought to try to apply and work with those communities to help them do quality development. And basically, they're self-evident here. I won't read them to you, but it has to do with good land land management principles. We're involved because of the sewer and water issues.
I know that the good senator here is just itching to jump into this.
I was just curious. There's been a lot of debate over these. Are there performance measures for the Community Solutions Teams? And has anyone done an evaluation of each of the teams now that they've been in existence for 3 or 4 years to see if they're, if they have goals and if they're accomplishing any of them?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, there are not official, like, Oregon benchmark performance measures for the Community Solutions Teams. The Community Solutions Teams are supposed to be not viewed as a separate program, like our air, water, and waste that have performance measures, but rather as a way of doing business. That said, I know, because I was very involved in the teams in Eastern Oregon, that at least the teams that I was involved with did in fact develop pretty elaborate performance measures. Now, I haven't been with them for a while, but a year ago or so when I was involved with those teams, they were going through, particularly the Northeast team and the Lower John Day and the Central team were the ones I was familiar with, were developing some pretty elaborate measures. Couldn't tell you about the West Side teams because I'm not as, although I can tell you about Southwestern, if I can't remember the name, they call themselves SWIG, Southwestern Intergovernmental group. That's what it is. Anyway, they also, they have, because they were probably the most developed of all the teams. They have memorandums of understanding with, like, the Rogue Council of Governments, with some of their federal partners. So I'm sure that they probably have performance measures. The North Coast, I don't know. It's probably the team I'm least familiar with.
And I'd be curious, Madam Chair, maybe if the governor's office is listening, and if they have done an evaluation, if anyone has said, when we set these things up, these are our goals, and then monitored their performance against their goals.
It's a good question.
Because we've been funding them for a few years in one form or another now, and now they want to be all general fund. So I thought in my part of the state they just were there to tick everybody off. But apparently in other parts of the state they're actually doing positive things. So it would be nice to see if there was that sort of standard that they were monitoring against.
Madam Chair, I think the governor's office probably is the place for those central performance measures. Anyway, I just wanted to share with you.
Can I ask one other thing? Do you have instructions to your member or members on the teams? I mean, on each of the teams, do they have a set of instructions? This is what we expect of you when they go out and go into those meetings? Are there clearly identifiable goals that they're after?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, since I've been the director in November, starting in November, I haven't given any explicit goals, but when I was on a team and part of the effort when I was over in Central Oregon, we basically used, you know, general marching orders from our director at that time was Langdon Marsh for me on getting together and solving problems with our fellow, with our sister agencies. And then how that got translated is that we in our team would set goals and objectives. And we actually, on the central team, we had a set of guiding principles. We had, you know, commitments of number of hours we're going to meet and all that. I mean, we got pretty detailed, but it does vary from team to team, I think. In our agency, and my last note on that, I do know that different agencies have approached CST with different levels of energy. DEQ happened to be an agency that approached it with a lot of energy. I mean, we really saw it as a way to do our work better. And I think for us as an agency, it's been a successful concept, and it may vary for other agencies. The back of this, again, is just a map of where the regions, where the teams are and what are called regional partnerships. And let me just explain to you what that means. When the teams were formed, they were state agency teams. The next iteration after that, then, was an offer to the local governments throughout the rest of the state to partner up in any way they wanted to, and then with themselves, and then partner with the state agencies as well. And the one that I know a fair amount about is the Lower John Day region, and that was the state agencies were basically based out of the Bend area, but then the counties up and along the Columbia got together and formed the Lower John Day, and basically because of Laura Pryor's leadership in Gillum County. But the other county judges really jumped in as well, and they partnered with the state and wrote an agreement and everything. So that was probably one of the most fully developed partnerships, as well as the Southwestern Oregon ones, and the others vary. There is a Baker-Morrill partnership that I'm familiar with as well. So that was the general concept. The interesting thing, particularly in Eastern Oregon, which I think generally feels neglected and or abused by state government, there's been a real desire for the state agencies to do business more like this. I mean, they liked the model that CST presented, and one of the things that we ended up being involved in, even though it wasn't formalized in a budget package or anything, was getting the natural resource agencies together around the agencies that were involved with the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, and just started meeting and getting together and trying to do business in the same way that the CST model. So I know in that region it's been a model that people have embraced and the local governments have appreciated, and it's, and I think have been, there have been some benefits.
And the, one of the interesting things about the whole concept of adding another layer of government to coordinate layers of government is that, you know, I think that all of us have examples of situations in the districts that we represent where projects have become bogged down or become really expensive and time-consuming because of all the conflicting layers of regulations. And it isn't just state government. It's local government, county government. And then, you know, we've got the overlay of the Clean Water Act and the Endangered Species Act and those layers of government. And a lot of times we end up with the Corps of Engineers and the federal fish and wildlife folks kind of thrown into the mix. And it's always been kind of a puzzle to me that we have not made the agency cooperation side of looking at things just an integrated part of the way that the agencies do business, and we've chosen instead to treat it as a real separate piece, a separate piece of the budget, a separate piece of the agency. Can you comment on how, just kind of how you see the agency under your term as the director dealing with that issue?
Madam Chair, I think it's a really excellent observation and a true one. The way that it works or has been working now is that there are 9 teams, and the way DEQ has done it is that the managers, we are a decentralized agency, as I said, and we have 16 offices around the state, and those offices have managers in them. And I'll speak of Eastern Region since I was that administrator and I know it better than any. But for example, on the central CST, the Bend office, I would rotate the team member. Dick Nichols was it for water, and then Brett McKnight was for a year. I mean, they rotated. And then up in Pendleton, Joni Hammond, she was the manager up in Pendleton, and she'd be part of that team. And then in the Dalles, my manager there would be part of that team. And I'm pretty sure that DEQ on the west side of the mountains did the same thing. I mean, they assigned the participation in the team to the managers who were there. Then, in addition to that, we had, as you know, during the current biennium, the funding source were these T21 transportation ODOT dollars. And part of the problem with that is that the work that could be charged to that funding source had to be transportation related. So we never did fully utilize the resources that were allocated to DEQ for CST this current biennium. We charged as much as we felt we could legitimately charge to that funding source, but we had to be careful about it, obviously. So we basically, I think, did what you're looking for. I mean, we had people meeting with their peers, and in some of the teams actually include federal partners as well. They've expanded to bring in some of the federal agencies, which I think is great. Southwestern does that, and so does Northeast team. And then there was the one position that we did pretty much legitimately be able to fund out of the money we had was our central DEQ community solutions team person who was the liaison here in Salem, and that was very helpful to the director. That person would be the staff to the director, because all the directors go to CST meetings with their fellow directors every 2 weeks. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of energy and focus at our level on this activity. So we meet, we have our staff person, and then we have our, in DEQ's case, our field managers who have probably, not all of them are monthly meetings, but they are at least every 2 months, I think. I haven't checked on it for a while. Those field team meetings where they are dealing with issues. What I would like to be able to do is there is, in the areas where this program is appreciated, there is getting to be more and more interest in it. And if we are successful in getting any of these staff positions that we're asking for, I want them to be, in addition to the central Salem position, which I think has served us well, we're asking for three more, one for each region. And my vision for that position is to really have it be assigned to each of my three regional administrators as kind of a backup for these managers who are going to all these team meetings, make sure these meetings are covered, make sure that there's a central contact point for any local governments in that region, either as an ombudsperson or problem solver or whatever, where we can say, this person in Eastern Oregon is your community solutions team contact for DEQ. And if you've got an issue that or a project that you want be addressed by the team, you can get there, go there, and they will get it high on the radar screen. Or if you're having a problem and it's not getting addressed, they could fulfill kind of an ombudsperson role. The concern I have, and the reason I think that there's two reasons I think it's a good investment. One is that all of us involved in this are bureaucracies, and it takes an extra push to get culture changed. Culture doesn't just change because some director wakes up some morning and says, well, this is a good idea, let's go do it. You have to invest in it, and you have to be serious about it, and you have to be serious from the top. And that's one of the reasons that I go to all the CST meetings every 2 weeks. I mean, not every one is a good use of my time, but those contacts with my fellow directors and that message that sends to my staff that working with our partner agencies is a good thing to do is very important. And so funding the activity, supporting it, figuring out how to do it more, I think is a good investment. There's going to come a time when the managers that I have out in those regions who are going to all these team meetings and trying to spend their time on all these projects and discerning whether projects are good ones to get involved in, they're not going to be able to do all that and do their regular management job at DEQ as well. That's why when I was on the central team, when we wrote our initial agreement with one another, we only committed to 16 hours worth of meetings every month, because we said to ourselves, we can't do our real jobs, if you will, and meet with each other any more than 16 hours a month. We very quickly found out that we had to commit more. I mean, if we were going to be serious about doing CST stuff, it was going to take more time. And one of the projects, for example, was we wanted to invest with the city of Madras. They were just starting a visioning process, and we said, this is perfect. We will go as the community solutions team agencies, and we will say, we would like to partner with you in your visioning exercise from day one, so that because they had and we added corrections to our team for this dialogue. They were getting a prison, they had sewage treatment problems, blah, 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 blah. So we did that, we had some really great opportunities to meet with them, and then their local government fell apart. I'll stop, because and I've told Senator Dukes, because I know she's had some problems with this, and I told her I was going to do this when I was here, because I'm a real believer, and I just think we have to figure out how to do business differently, and this helps do it.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have had real mixed emotions about community solutions teams for some time now. I've heard some pretty horrific examples, I think, of how they don't work in some places. And then recently I heard some great examples from local governments who've been in a couple of other counties who've been working with them on transportation issues specifically and could not say enough good things about them. And I think that what I've been able to ascertain with the community solutions teams is that they are different in different areas depending on the different regional staffs of the different agencies that are working together. So it has been a difficult thing for me to truly understand what their ultimate value is to us all. Not only just in effectiveness, but obviously in using staff time and taxpayer resources. Now, having said that, getting back to your comment, And I will preface my remark by saying that I do not in any way intend to disparage the motives of the governor in any way here. But from my viewpoint as the owner of my own company, if I desired something to happen in terms of agencies working together, attitudes to change within the bureaucracy, which was one of your major concerns, and it's a valid concern, I would direct it to change if I felt that was the proper direction to go. I would simply say to the agency heads, I believe we need to do this. We need to change this particular aspect of what, and whatever issue that it is, and there's so many of them. I believe that it really is that leadership can be provided from the top. And if that is the case, then do we really need community solutions teams that are meeting on such a regular basis for that particular purpose? Okay? And I qualify that. Because the mindset of the bureaucracy will ultimately be and reflect, in many respects, I believe, the mindset of management, of the management of the state. So attitude in a company comes from the top down. The other thing I'm fond of saying is a company is only as good as the people that work for it, too. So management obviously has to work with their employees in a respectful manner, but yet management sets that direction. And if the bureaucracy needs a mindset change to work better and not have turf battles with other agencies over many of these issues that seem to overlap on a regular basis, then it really needs to come from the top. And so that's my only point with that is I think I question the necessity of having to change the mindset of bureaucracy through using community solutions teams as opposed to changing bureaucracy from the top.
Representative Morgan, Representative Krupp, if I may just respond briefly. I totally agree with you, and I think and I did work in the governor's office for a year, as some of you may know, and I experienced the morphing, if you will, of the community solutions team approach to the Oregon Plan for Salmon Watersheds. And both of those initiatives did start and continue with a message from the top. There's no question about it. On community solutions team, there was an executive order that established the quality development objectives and said, you agencies go forth and do good and achieve these objectives. On the Oregon Plan, there also an executive order and similar direction. And there's also there at some point was a bill for going to be a bill out of the governor's office. I don't know whatever happened to it. But what we were struggling with in when I was in the governor's office, and I think it's connected to what you're saying, is how does one, this governor will be gone, and at some point I will be gone, and however zealous either one of us may be about wanting government to do business differently, the reality is that these bureaucracies will go on after we're gone. So how do you try and perpetuate within the institution of the bureaucracy the formalization of that mindset that you believe in? And hence you have executive orders, and hence you have staff who call themselves members of community solutions teams. And in when I worked in the governor's office on the Oregon Plan side, I wrote a charter. And all the natural resource agencies had to sign, 15 of them, had to sign the charter on doing business together in this new mode and in these field teams. And I know it sounds horrifying in some respects, but I'll be one of the first to cop to it, that until we had community solutions team, when I was the regional administrator in Bend, I didn't know the first name of my sister regional state people. It's shameful. And I think we've changed that. I really do believe that community solutions team, if nothing else, has changed that. It's remarkable how isolated government entities are. It's remarkable. And I do like to believe that it's changing, and I will give this governor credit for that, because I think within the bureaucratic structure he has tried really, really hard to get state agencies to look at this differently.
Before I give you a chance to speak, Representative Nolan, I think that the point that's being brought up here and the point that Senator Dukes made, there are all really critical, that all of us, I think, from the smallest business owner all the way to the governor, is interested in forming a system where the different government agencies work together to solve solve problems and make things on the ground happen in a way that makes the most sense for them to happen. The ultimate problem that we've got here is again, it's the funding side of it. How are we going to find the dollars and justify spending the dollars on adding more positions and more levels to the government to deal with simplifying the government? There's kind of a fundamental cross purpose going on here where you're growing government in order to make it more simple. And the challenge would seem to be to find ways to introduce the community solution team mindset or dream into the state bureaucracies without having it be a separate and funded and growing part of government. And that to me is the real challenge of this.
Madam Chair, if I might, just to go from the sublime to the mundane and talk about money here for a minute. The dilemma is, remember when I talked the other day about how the budgets are organized in silos, and for our agency it's air, water, waste. And except for general fund, remember I said the general fund can move this way, but the other kinds of funding sources have to stay where they are, and they're relatively, I don't know if John Linger's still here or not, but they're watched pretty closely by the people who provide that funding as to what we do with it. And if, for example, if an industry source sees their permit money coming into us and saying we want our permit for that permit money, they might not be real keen about some of that permit money being used for some DEQ regular permit writer to go sit in on a community solutions team meeting as part of their regular work. So that's what tracks us back to general fund as a way to, it's not an add-on activity, but a way you could maybe get to where you're trying to get to is by giving permission in whatever this whatever form this process allows you to do that, for government agencies to invest in doing business in a community solutions mode. The general fund package is a manifestation of that permission, but I know I'm kind of going out there a little bit, but the idea is everybody will sort of stay in their silo and get their revenue source and continue to do their business as they always have, unless permission, as Representative Krupp says, and or direction. I mean, I could say, okay, everybody in DEQ, we're going to do business in a community solutions mode. Now, if you have validated that by whatever process you go through, that's a lot easier on me than if I say that to everybody and then I have my municipal fee payers or my industrial fee payers or whomever coming in and saying, well, how come all these people are off, you know, bonding with communities instead of working on my permit? I mean, that's sort of a gross generalization, but I think you understand what I'm saying. So we ask for it in a package, really, to get the validation, and yeah, you know, the money and the resource, but it's we need your help to have permission to do business in that way as well.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like to make the analogy with businesses as well. I own a small business. I have been a vice president in a couple of very large businesses. I've never worked in a business where the president of the company or the chairman of the board had to go to 60 or 90 other folks to get the funding to implement a program that the president of the company wants to do. The different branches of government are both a strength of the system and also in some ways a crippling element of efficiency. Democracy is not designed for its efficiency. It's designed for making sure we make good decisions. But it seems to me that the governor has, in fact, done what Representative Krupp suggests he do. He has proposed to us a budget that would implement a community solutions team. It's his job as the executive to say, this is the way to bring good decision-making down to the communities and across the different agencies. And it's our job to either say, we agree that's an important thing to do and we're going to provide the money. We agree it's important, there isn't enough money, and don't do something else in favor of doing this, or come back to us next time. But I think he's made the proposal to implement a solution that he thinks is true to the policies that we've set for them.
I just wanted to point out, with the analogy made to the Oregon plan, there was a huge difference with the Oregon plan. The governor set up, I'm not sure, a cabinet-level group. Every agency had that had anything to do or might have anything to do with fish was on that cabinet-level group. They met, I believe, once a month, and there was a memo in every month what I did for fish this last month. And that's never been done with the Community Solutions Team, and that's why I was asking about goals and performance measures and things like that. We can get calls from mayors saying they did this great project in my city. Now, they've been there for 3 years. I hope to heck they've done something in your city in those 3 years. But there's no report that comes out that says the first year of operation they did all of this. The second year they did this, and the third year they did this, and this is how they have improved economic development in Oregon, or this is how they have improved the permitting system in Oregon, or this is how, I don't know exactly if they're working to hand out all the little pots of money, if that's the top priority, or if an integrated permitting system is the top priority, or, there's got to be a top priority. There can't be five of them. It seems to me to lack direction, and I think that comparing it to the Oregon plan is not a decent comparison, because the priorities for that plan were established very clearly, and the interest from the top was established very solidly, and agencies had to report regularly what they had done to make that work, and if they didn't, they were accountable. And I don't think anybody's holding anybody accountable for what they've done on these teams.
Representative Hanson.
Well, this has been an interesting discussion. There's a couple differences I see. One, it's a lot harder, getting people to work together, although it seems pretty simple, can be real difficult. It's not, in this building we hear herding cats and a lot of analogies like that with various kinds of critters, but one of the differences with community solutions is you can do things from the top down, but that doesn't really apply to community solutions where you're working with a lot of different communities, because one community may have much different priorities than another community, and it's got to come to a certain extent from the bottom up. The other difference is the governor can issue incredibly well thought out executive orders and force a certain level of cooperation. The real value with community solutions teams is it's not just state government involved. You've got a lot of different levels of government. Certainly the cooperation amongst the state agencies is important, but it also has to fit well with what the local governments are doing and what the federal government's doing. And this is a journey, not a destination. In the Portland area, when I first got involved in local government, and I was a metro councilor for 8 years, there was incredible divisions. We had a mayor of the city of Portland that wouldn't set foot on Metro property because of differences between Metro and the city of Portland in times past. The level of cooperation between the local governments, between Metro, Multnomah County, City of Portland, took probably 12, 15 years really to develop to the point that you could say, yeah, this is really different now. And the local government seemed to really be working together with a lot of common vision. So it's going to take a long time to get where we really want to be, and I think there needs to be some catalysts. And community solution teams can very easily be that catalyst. And there's not, I think it's really necessary that we can fund them so they can provide that spark and that leadership. If we don't, then I think we end up in the situation of saying we want cooperation, but just not really putting money behind implementing it. And I just don't see that it can happen without it. There's always going to be varying degrees of success. Some teams are going to fall together well and make some real major accomplishments. Others, you've got like the Madras situation where one element slips at some point and you don't accomplish as much as you want to. But I think on the long run, if we don't do this, 8 years from now, we're going to be somebody else will be having very similar discussions to what we're having now. You know, how do we get the cooperation going? It can happen. It's going to be slow, and it's going to take a while to get there.
Please proceed.
All right, Madam Chair. Thank you for indulging me on Community Solutions Team. Just a couple other points on this cross-media section. The bulk of the other fund that shows up in the budget there is, in fact, reflected in the ODOT money that was for CST. There's also some other funds. The Green Permit Program, the way that program works is a $5,000 deposit is received from the facility that is interested in having a green permit, and we've issued two of those, one to LSI Logic in Gresham and one to Louisiana Pacific in Hines, and then the department works against that deposit in a cost recovery mode. And if we exceed the $5,000, then we get a little bit more. If we don't, then we return what we don't use of that money. That is one of our cross-media programs that's been very popular. There's also some federal dollars in there. This is for pollution prevention grants that we get from the Environmental Protection Agency that we use to encourage pollution prevention activity in business and in government. There's also a couple of emergent issues, the one I'm sure you've heard a lot about, sustainability. The governor did do an executive order on sustainability, and we've been doing our best at our agency to work on sustainable principles in terms of reducing the amount of paper we use and the amount of toxics, I hate to use that word, but buying types of paper that are less toxic than others because of the way they are developed. In terms of our excess furniture and supplies, finding ways to reuse those rather than dispose, that kind of thing. And offering programs and technical assistance to businesses on pollution prevention as well. So the real focus of cross-media is just that. It's areas where the air, water, and land programs come together and we try and have some kind of a concerted effort to deal with them holistically rather than in one silo at a time. And the persistent bioaccumulative toxic one is an issue that I'm very interested in personally since becoming the director and want to figure out. There was an executive order on that issue. The Oregon Environmental Council is very interested in it. Obviously, all the news you've heard about the toxics in fish in the Willamette and potential then toxics in the sediment. These are toxics that stay in our environment for a long time, and I think we need to learn more about them and try and figure out what to do about them. So I will, oh, pollution control tax credits. I knew I'd forgotten to mention something. I know that this subject is of some interest. We currently have a funding for a person to manage that program, and the way that is funded is we can charge 1% of the claimed facility cost with a minimum of $50 and a maximum of $15,000 to fund the administrative processing of the work. The way we do it is we have a person on staff who works for Helen who processes the tax credits, but we actually contract with an accounting firm for a lot of the analysis. We don't do it ourselves. But this is a program, of course, that you know the department administers. It's scheduled to sunset in December of this year, and there will be a lot of discussion about it this session, I'm sure.
I have some handouts.
Helen says she has some handouts on this program. If you would be interested in having them, we'll hand them out. If not, we'll just move on.
Might as well hand them out if you have them.
We anticipated we might get a lot of questions about it, but it's okay if we don't.
I think we're suffering from daylight savings time jet lag here.
Shall I just explain a little bit about what they're getting?
Sure. Helen will give you the 25 words or less version of what a company gets for the pollution control tax credit.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Helen Lottridge. I'm the administrator of the Management Services Division. The 25 words or less would be that the first tax credit bill was passed in 1967. And the purpose of the bill was to provide an incentive and financial support for pollution control facilities that were required by environmental regulations. Since then, the statutes have been revised numerous times and have been expanded to include more things like alternatives to field burning, recycling, and material recovery facilities. The most recent change to the tax credit program has been the expansion in 1999 to include pollution control tax credits for non-point source pollution, and you're receiving one of the handouts that you have describes that. The each biennium we publish an activity report in this program, and that's the rather thick document that you got. I'm not going to go through all of this with you. Mercifully, I'm sure you're saying to yourselves. I would just call your attention to the second page in your handout, which shows the contents and the tables, and particularly the tables you might find of interest if you have questions about getting the history or the aggregate information about the pollution control tax credits that have been issued. There have been a total of $622 million worth of tax credits certified by the Environmental Quality Commission since the program's inception, and over the last 5 years we have averaged $48 million in tax credits certified. That's tax liability, not credits taken, per biennium.
Questions? Senator Dukes?
Curiosity, I guess. I keep hearing things, and I've never looked far enough into it to know if it's true at this point, but that today we give tax credits under this for installing equipment or entering into programs that are required by law, either federal or state law. Is that?
Chair Morgan and Senator Dukes, that is correct. Approximately 76% of the value of the certificates that are certified by the Environmental Quality Commission are for pollution control facilities that are required by environmental regulations. So we continue with the 1967 premise.
Do you have any idea? I mean, it seems to me when we started this, most of those requirements weren't there. So we were encouraging businesses to do things that really weren't required. Do you have any feel? Did you say 76% of them were are currently required? Do you have any feel for how that's changed over time?
Chair Morgan and Senator Dukes, I think I need to clarify your question. You mean as far as changed as the tax credits that are given for things that are really required by regulation?
Yeah, as opposed to when we started the program, a lot of those things weren't required. We were really encouraging people to go above and beyond.
Chair Morgan and Senator Dukes, you're correct. I think that the circumstance back then, and I am old enough to remember some, was that the environmental law, most of the environmental laws were quite new. Mm-hmm. And continuing on through the 70s, there were new requirements imposed on industry that hadn't been there before. And the thinking, I believe, was that industry really hadn't had any chance to factor these into their operating plans, and that there really needed to be some incentive and financial support for installing those facilities. Since then, although we're still giving tax credits for pollution control facilities that are required by regulations, most of them, in fact, I believe that the recipients view them as still being an incentive for environmental protection, and we also hear that there's some value from them for economic development, although we don't pretend to be an expert on that at the DEQ.
Yeah, I wasn't meaning, I'm sorry, to get into the political end of it, but rather the statistical end that says when we first started this program, were half of the value of half the credits for things that were law and we wanted them, you know, to help them do it, or were they more things that weren't required that, you know, people were getting into above and beyond what the law was then? I'm just trying to get a feel for whether or not that's changed over time.
Chair Morgan and Senator Dukes, I feel pretty safe in saying that virtually 100% of the tax credits granted at the beginning, starting in the 60s, were probably for pollution control facilities required by regulation.
Really?
That was the intent of the law to begin with, and it has been expanded since then so that now if someone installs a facility that is purely for pollution control and is not required by law, within certain parameters, there are tax credits available for those.
Thank you.
Did that answer your question?
Okay.
Representative Hayden.
Well, just to take that discussion a step farther, I haven't completely worked it out in my mind, and perhaps by the time we finish the hearings on pollution tax credit, I'll have a better idea. But I just have the idea that a promise made should be a promise kept. And to not continue that program after starting with it would be wrong, because it seems to me that pollution control is not a benefit of the particular industry involved or even to the consumer that buys that product, but it is a benefit to society at large. And if this is a program that benefits society at large, then it's only fair that the cost be socialized across the entire spectrum, which would mean pollution tax credits from the general fund, so that everybody participates in cleaning up the environment, not just one particular industry. I may change my mind, but maybe not. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, with that, I think I will have us move on to the agency management discussion, which is at tab 8, and I am going to ask Helen Lottridge to lead in this discussion. She is the administrator of our Management Services Division, and I think can speak about this very intelligently, and you'll have somebody new to look at and hear from.
Thank you, Stephanie. Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Helen Lottridge. I'm the administrator of the Management Services Division, which is part of agency management, of the agency management portion of our budget. The other portion is fundamentally made up of the Office of the Director. The two primary purposes of the agency management part of our agency are to lead and support the programs, environmental work, and to ensure fiscal and legal accountability. Our priorities are to provide an effective and efficient infrastructure and systems operations to the people who are doing environmental work, to provide agency-wide leadership in strategic planning and program integration, and you have a copy of our strategic plan in the very back pocket of your binder. We also organize performance measurement activities through agency management and outreach and communication as well. As far as performance measures in agency management, this is arguably the most difficult part of the agency in which to measure performance, although we are making progress at doing that. Right now we are developing or have goals for cycle time on such things as recruitments for human resources and reimbursements coming out of accounting. We very recently, and I do have a couple of handouts here that I might give to you.
Want both?
Yes, might as well. I'll refer to the one first. In December of 2000, we distributed this customer satisfaction survey. You're going to get a copy of it. It's on white paper, but it's several pages long, to every manager at DEQ to find out how our customer service was internally. Now, you've expressed a lot of interest in customer service externally, and ours is more of an internal focus, but we think it's every bit as important. And so this is one of our primary methods for measuring performance in Management Services Division.
Excuse me, Helen, when did you do the survey?
Madam Chair, we did this in December of 2000.
Okay.
I have some of the results. If you're ever interested, I can give you details on that. We also look at the number of audit findings in budget and accounting offices. I was very pleased that we had no audit findings on our governor's request budget as we went through the budget cycle, and we had one audit finding in our agency request budget, and we think this is pretty phenomenal. We also have consistently outstanding financial audit results. I can't say enough good things about our accounting manager at DEQ, Judy Hatton. She is extremely valuable to us in that regard. Our safety record is very good overall, although in the last year we've had too many automobile incidents, both in the area of accidents and citations, and so we're putting new emphasis on that area. Another measurement that we pay very close attention to is our size relative to the rest of the agency. And as Stephanie indicated in her agency overview, the way we look at our operating budget, we are about 10% of the total operating budget for the agency in agency management. I want to talk for just a few minutes about our accomplishments. In agency management, we did lead the development of the agency's strategic plan and several process improvements efforts, and I'll give you a list of those process improvement efforts later on. And you already have seen the strategic plan. We received the State Controller's Gold Star Certificate for Excellence in Financial Reporting for the 13th straight year. It's not all that unusual to get that award. A lot of agencies get it, but for 13 straight years, I think that's pretty commendable, again, for our accounting office. We, in this last biennium, developed an agency-wide time accounting system for accountability reports and for agency decision-making. This is going to give us a much better tool to calculate and report on such things as the number of labor units required per permit, so that we can know if our efficiency efforts are effective over time, and so that we can report to our stakeholders how much of our resources we're really spending on each different activity. So this This system is, I think Director Halleck mentioned earlier, is in test right now, and will go into production July 1st of this year. We're sharing more map-based information on the internet, and our webpage has a lot more information about our operations and requirements. We've upgraded security at various offices. And also, I wanted to mention to you that we upgraded our computer systems to meet Y2K requirements without any additional funding, and we did not have any Y2K bugs at the time of the new millennium. The second handout that I have given you there is our agency-wide measures project. We call it the Environmental Results Measurement System, and we launched that during this last biennium. Environmental measures over the last 30 years have for the most part been accounting of activities. And this is true not just for DEQ, but for all environmental agencies across the nation. And so we would say, well, we completed X number of inspections, which was more than we anticipated, and so that's success. And that may be well and good for productivity measures, but what we're finding is that we really can't answer certain questions like, is the environment improving as a result of our actions? What is the health of the environment? And so this agency-wide project will move us forward heavily during this next biennium to develop measures that will really show the impact on the environment.
Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, I'd like to commend whoever wrote paragraph 2. I can understand every word in it. It's very clear. If you did that, I commend you.
Madam Chair and Representative Hayden, I would love to take credit for that, but one of the people on my staff wrote that paragraph, and I'll pass that along. Thank you very much. I'll talk just a little bit more about that ERMS project a little bit later on. Now, on the next slide, which is emerging issues, and we're on page 88 of your book now. In my division, perhaps the biggest emerging issue is the expanding role of information in environmental management. More and more, we find that our environmental decisions should be made with quality environmental information. And that's information about the health of a particular region, not just information about how many facilities there are, or how many permits we issue, or how many inspections we made. But we would like for our decisions to be driven more and more over time with the increasing use of information. And so this is one of our high priorities at DEQ. A second emerging issue is our aging computer systems. Our computer systems are getting pretty old, and in technology, the life cycle of a system is getting shorter and shorter, it seems. And many of our systems are old enough that the vendors who sold us the platforms are no longer supporting them. So our maintenance costs get higher as that phenomenon increases. And so that's an issue for us. Not only our maintenance costs, but our service level as well. Measuring performance, I've already talked about some. E-commerce, the potential and the potential demand and cost of e-commerce. This e-commerce is not just an insignificant part of the economy anymore. E-commerce is a $22 billion a year business in this country. And we see everybody getting on the bandwagon, and there's a huge demand for being able to do business over the internet. You hear about e-government as well. And we know that there are a lot of efficiencies and service improvements that we can offer over the internet. We also know that we must take a deliberate course toward getting there and not try to do everything at once. It's very expensive, and we want to be sure that the central state systems are ready to handle monetary transactions before we get into any of that. So we're taking a very deliberative and somewhat slow-paced approach to e-commerce, although we are moving in that direction. Let me give you just a couple of examples. We're going to be tracking permits, so the people who have applied for a permit will be able to get on the internet and find out what the status of their permit is. People will be able to report discharges into the water by getting on the internet. These are required by paper now. So we're going to do some of those things, but we're not going there by leaps and bounds. Diversity, Stephanie already talked about that in our agency overview. We don't have a record to be proud of in diversity in our agency. It's a very difficult area for us, and we're taking new actions to improve in that area. We've done a lot toward recruiting directly to minority communities. We have decided that that isn't enough, and what we need to be doing is mentoring people from a very young age and seeing them clear through their education and getting them employed, hopefully at DEQ. I just want to mention a couple of other things. Our budget complexity and accountability is something that is a high priority for us. We have a growing need to provide good information and be very accountable for our budget, and nobody's more aware of that than this group. We also want to bring to your attention, did you want to talk about the new laboratory facility for a minute?
Only, Madam Chair, I would just mention that one of the challenges facing me as the new director is that our lab is being booted out of its current location at Portland State University, and we're going to have to find a place to relocate, and that will be a big deal, money-wise and physically. So they need the space, and we have to move.
Well, we just happen to have a facility for you in Portland, don't we, Representative Morgan?
It's definitely worth looking into.
Okay, if you have no further questions in that, I'll move into the budget overview part of agency management.
Questions or comments? Representative Heath.
If you'd like to just to spend another minute or two on your proposals for educating staff from the cradle, I'd be interested in that.
Madam Chair and Representative Hayden, I'd be happy to talk to you about that. There are some organizations here in Oregon who actually, they're nonprofit organizations who are in the business of helping employers work with and mentor minority groups. And so what we do is we have a couple of programs. One is a high school intern program where high schoolers will come and work at DEQ every summer and kind of get introduced to the sciences usually or information systems and kind of explore whether this is a career decision that they want to make. So they get a first-hand look at it in order to decide if it's something they're interested in. Then the other program that we have is more for college interns, and what we do is we get the same interns back. We have one now that we have had for 3 years, and we're going to add two more. So we get them back each year in their college program so that they're getting kind of a consistent set of experiences with us.
Madam Chair. So, all right, so this is a high school and college program. The way you said it, from a very young age, I wondered if it was a component of the Oregon Children's Plan.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, no.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, when you get to a certain age, young is relative, Representative Hayden.
Should I say thank you? Let's move ahead into the budget issues.
Okay, now you're on page 89 of your book. This slide shows the portion of the agency's operating budget, which is agency management. We noted, I think on the first day of our time here, that Mr. Rocco's operating budget does include debt service, and we haven't in our operating budget structure. I think in Mr. Rocco's structure that we're about 9% of the operating budget. I've mentioned that environmental work is increasingly dependent on infrastructure, and that's both information systems for science, environmental science, and systems that will issue invoices and collect money. This does increase the urgency for accurate and reliable tools, and I think this is a very positive thing. It requires us in agency management to have a much closer link with the programs when they develop their budgets so that we're responding to and anticipating their needs. This 10%, the relative size of agency management to the rest of the agency, is very important to us. It's one we take very seriously. We don't measure it just by the numbers of people, but also we measure it by the efforts that we have taken to improve our efficiencies and to avoid having to add people or even reduce. And if you'd like a few examples of those things that we've done, I can give them to you. If not, we can just move on.
Let's move along.
Madam Chair, I want to just interject something. Helen's going to get, you see on this page, numbers of actions, but with regard to the comments she made earlier about budget complexity, and I think you have requested that we do sort of an overview, I think we have 127, how many revenue sources?
127 cash funds, yes.
127 basically cash funds for revenue coming into the department, so you can understand how complex and why we have such a wonderful accounting manager.
In fact, on this page, you'll see several statistics about our accounting office there. And I might mention one that is not listed there. Through these systems in our accounting office flow $90 million worth of revenue invoiced and collected per biennium for the agency. So this is pretty key function for us. We have over 85 major data systems. They provide support for all of the other work that goes on in the agency. I might also point out that our current budget, our 9901 budget, leaves us about one person to develop new or replacement systems after we've finished maintaining these 85 systems. So it's one of the reasons our systems are aging. Okay. This next chart on page 91 just gives another visual picture of the stability of our agency management or administrative portion over time related to the rest of the budget. I won't tarry there unless you have questions. Okay. Our policy option packages in agency management are listed here, and I have some handouts for two of them. Package 161 is the first one that you have handouts for, and what this would do is, I'm going to refer you to this handout that looks like this.
Is it being handed out or is it in the book?
It's being handed out. Are there some extra blank pages in there, Ken? If you would look under the sections over in the right-hand column, first of all, what does it do? It adds increased accountability, reporting, environmental performance measures, and management decision-making tools. So what do we need to do that? We're asking for one FTE for process improvements and environmental performance measures. And one of the handouts that you have looks like this. Okay. This is a report on our organization improvement activities in the year 2000. And the last part of that should be a list that looks like this. This is a list of all of the...
Oh, I don't think he's caught up.
Okay. Right at the end of that. This is a list of all of the process improvements either underway or planned over the next 5 years. As Stephanie has mentioned to you, she's very committed to using process improvements to increase our efficiency and effectiveness. Back to the sheet that looks like this, under what's included. I mentioned to you that we developed a time accounting system, which is under test right now, and in this handout we show you what it is, basically. This is one of the old systems that we used to have for time accounting, this black one here, and this is what one of the screens from our new system looks like. This is the largest system at DEQ, and it's imperative that it have quality information and be maintained well over time. And so one of the things we're asking in here is two FTE, one in information systems and one in accounting, to maintain the system and to ensure the quality and to generate reports. And the third thing we're asking for in this package is another budget analyst. Any questions on that one? It's always hard to follow acts like water quality and sewage treatment methods with agency management. Okay, the next package that I want to discuss with you is package number 162, and it's in one of the handouts that Mr. Rocco just gave you. It looks like this. This is a very high priority for us. It builds on our earlier work to make information more accessible and sensible so that it's more usable for people. And it, I think I'm getting ahead of the handouts here.
Yeah, slow down.
I apologize, Mr. Rocco. This handout that shows the picture of a map. This is the type of query tool and access that we want to have available on the internet for more of our systems, so that our staff, people in other agencies, and business people, consultants, and the general public can get to our information and understand what it means more easily. This screen print is a result of a query of all of the facilities of interest to DEQ in Marion County. And there's a dot there, it would be possible to get information about what permits are in place at each of those facilities.
Is this system integrated into the water resources system that they're developing that shows all of their sites? I mean, are we establishing a system here where that this is compatible with other layers of data?
Madam Chair, this system is not integrated with water resources. However, there's no reason why it couldn't be. I'm certain that they store in their system geographic location information, like latitude and longitude, as do we. And that's a very good way to link one system to another. And so I feel very confident that with some effort, the two systems could be linked, and that would be a very worthwhile thing to do. Did that answer your question? Not entirely, I see.
Well, what I'm wondering about is we are, as a state, supposed to be trying to design a system where all of the layers of data that we have relating to land use planning and geological information and water information and your information will be compatible and can be laid on to one another. But what I hear you saying is that this system is what, in or out of that? Where are you in relation to that?
Chair Morgan, These are critical questions for us. What this system does, what DEQ provides in this system is the underlying data. And then we have used the GIS layers that are available in the state GIS office to also integrate into this. And we also use data layers that are available from elsewhere. We call them in, like highway systems, for instance, county boundaries, that sort of thing. So we have the data about each of these facilities, which does and should live at DEQ, but we use shared GIS data layers for mapping it and showing it. Now, I think there's another part to your question, and that is, okay, but how do we link the information at DEQ with the information at Water Resources or any other department?
Mm-hmm.
I've been working for about 3 years now with more than 30 other states and EPA attacking this very question, because it's a question that is being asked everywhere. And what we have found is that you don't have to rebuild every system in order to link it. What you do need is a common standard, like everybody uses the same standard for latitude and longitude. And then if you want to share information, you map to that standard and you can combine information from more than one place, from many different places. So it doesn't require rebuilding whole systems. It does require everybody using a standard and mapping to it if you want to share.
So the question still remains in my mind. If I want to take the same geographical area and overlay where the well permits are for that area, how do I go about doing overlaying that on this?
Today, if Madam Chair, if you went into the DEQ website, you couldn't do it from there because we're not extracting that data from the Water Resources database. But I'll bet we could with a little coordination. And it would just be based on the latitude and longitude.
And Madam Chair, I'd have to check on this, but I bet in one of our policy packages is on the mapping of the public drinking water supply. I can't remember the name of the policy package, but I betcha in that project that they have integrated Water Resources data with drinking water data from the Health Division, because they're related. There's a reason to do it. It's a related topic. They're studying something where that information could be useful, and I'll check and see. So the ability's there. It's sort of, when do you have the catalyst and the reason and the need to cause the linkages to happen?
Okay. So then the other thing we want to do with this package is to update some of those aging systems. And the first two that are badly in need of that are two old water quality systems that need to be updated. And they are the discharge monitoring system and the site information system. And this package would enable us to do that, plus the things that you see listed in the very last paragraph on that page.
Right,
the right
there.
Column.
I think there was
somewhere. This page here. Madam Chair, I'll move to the next policy package then.
Go for it.
I don't have handouts for the last policy package. It's 163. And you will find it on page 464 in your big budget book. This package is in there for support of the program policy packages that are contained in this budget request. If all of those packages are approved, this is what we would need in agency management in order to provide infrastructure and central services for the increased load. If a portion of those packages are approved, then this package could and should be reduced accordingly. So it's a response to workload in the other packages.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we are finished, and I would just say one thing in conclusion, and then maybe we can talk with Mr. Rocco about what the rest of the week might look like. But you'll see on the, I think it's page 93 in your book, the same themes that I stated at the beginning of this presentation, and I would just close by repeating those. These were not written by anybody on my staff. These were written by me, and these are things that I believe in very strongly, and I became the director in November, and I hope that I'm going to have the opportunity in the coming months and years to fulfill all of them. I am committed to excellence, and I did give you some examples of some process improvement initiatives that I'm already starting. I am committing to solving problems, not just running programs, hence my commitment to the Community Solutions Team approach that you heard about quite a bit today. I do believe in accountability to the citizens of Oregon. I believe in public service, and I think that's what public service is all about. And you've heard Helen talk about some of the systems that are already in development, and those will be a priority to me to complete. And then finally, I believe in the mission of our agency, which is to protect our air, water, and land on behalf of all Oregonians. And I thank you for the opportunity to present all this material. I think we do have some housekeeping odds and ends for the rest of this week that we've talked about with Mr. Rocco, so maybe we can figure out what you would like to do with the rest of our time. And we are planning on coming Thursday, unless advised differently, to provide the follow-on enforcement discussion that Representative Close had asked be held in this committee. And I think Wednesday is public forum.
Public testimony, yes. And we're anticipating that if we don't get through all the public testimony on Wednesday, that we'll continue it on to Thursday also. Have you got any idea how long the presentation that you're planning on Thursday will take?
On enforcement, I'm sure that we can probably complete our remarks in 15-20 minutes. It will be the questions and the interest, of course, that drive how much time the entire thing takes.
I do it tomorrow.
Is it possible to do that presentation tomorrow?
I don't know, but I imagine the Lifeline is listening in and they're scurrying around to find, so I can find out and get back to Mr. Rocco.
If we could schedule that in for tomorrow, it would facilitate finishing this up in a more timely manner.
We do have, Madam Chair, we'll check on that. Also, we had the other loose ends that we have on our list, and we'd need to check in with you. One is to go into a more broad explanation on roll-up costs, and we have a little presentation on that. One on fees over time, you were interested in that.
Indirect.
The indirect rate, if you still want to have a discussion of that.
Budget structure.
Oh, and the overview of our budget structure, which bonds. Probably will put everyone to sleep. And then bonds.
And are you ready for those presentations tomorrow?
We were going to do all those tomorrow, and that's why we had, I guess, the enforcement planned on Thursday. But we can shuffle things around any way you'd like.
Why don't you check in and see what the status is on the enforcement presentation, because I would like to get to it tomorrow if it's at all possible to do it, and we'll hold Thursday as a contingency on that one.
It is possible to get to it tomorrow.
It is possible to get to enforcement. See the wonders of technology? It's amazing. It is possible to get to enforcement tomorrow.
Let's go ahead and put it on for tomorrow then.
Okay.
If the chair is willing to wield her gavel.
So I think we've pretty much got this under control schedule-wise. I have one question that has come into my mind as I've attempted to kind of get my arms around the structure of the budget, and that is there seems to me to be a kind of fundamental conflict between this decentralized agency and this extremely centralized budget. You can't look in the budget and see how much the agency has budgeted for each of the regional entities and how they're going to use the money. And you also, it isn't easy to find things like the charges that are associated with running the lab. And I'm wondering how it came to be this way, how you've got these two structures, the structure of the agency and the structure of the budget that are so different.
Madam Chair, I can respond to that briefly. And before I do, just a point of clarification. On that list of items like bonding and all that stuff, do you want us to not do that at all or plan for that on Thursday or try and fit it in tomorrow if enforcement doesn't take the whole time?
I think we should try to fit it in tomorrow. I would like to try to do all these things tomorrow if we can.
Okay. We'll try. To respond to your question, the budget is constructed today as it always has been at DEQ. It's basically been air, water, waste, agency management, laboratory in terms of the organizational units. And I just lied on that one too, didn't I? Okay.
It's not lab.
It's not lab. The lab is not separate. It's air, water, waste, and agency management. And then within those programs, we have all the activities that those programs perform. So each one has a permitting element, each one has a lab element, each one has an enforcement element. They're all in their little silos. And that is still the way we organize the budget. What changed is where the people are, except for the lab. The people have always been in the lab, and they're still in the lab, and they haven't gone anywhere. But the air, water, and waste people have some of them located in the headquarters in Portland, and the lab that's still there, and then they have a bunch of them located out in field offices. But the budget management has not changed. It is still centrally controlled air, water, and waste, and it funds all those activities irrespective of where the people are. And we're in the process of providing to Mr. Rocco the organization charts that show where the people are, but the money is still organized the same. It's air, water, waste.
So a
region doesn't have a budget, for example.
So how do you decide how much and how many people you're going to put in each region, how to allocate the resources, and how do we have a role in that?
I'll let Helen answer the second part of that question, maybe about how you have a role in it, but the way that it was initially decided was in 92 or 93 when we decentralized the agency. And at that time, there was an analysis, and actually every budget cycle since then, there's an analysis when we develop our budget of how many sources there are in that region and what's changed and what might be needed and how many new rules do we need, and we go through an internal process. I'll take water as an example. This is the same in every single program we have. We'll have the water program as a whole will consist of managers from the lab in water, from headquarters in water, and from the regions in water. All the water managers. That's one level below Helen. Helen's a division. There's me, division administrators, and then this cadre of managers. All those water managers, and over here there's a bunch of air ones, and over here there's a bunch of waste ones, they sit down and they look at the current budget and they look at what their program needs are, and they develop, as part of our internal process, what they would want to propose for the water program for the coming budget. And so they'll come up with ideas for policy packages or whatever, and they'll talk a little bit about where the needs are, what regional office or the lab or headquarters or whatever. And then that'll be, as part of our budget development, those water managers will ship their stuff up to the Helen level, the division administrator, and I participate in those too. And the air managers will do the same thing, and the waste managers will do the same thing. And then we'll go through at that management level the distillation of those various requests until we finally winnow it down to the budget request that goes to DAS. So at the table, at those manager tables, there are managers representing all aspects of the program, and they're all talking about what their needs are and debating among themselves, which I happen to think is a good process. I mean, they are the managers running the program, and they talk about what's important there. Then they get up to the Helen level, and there are headquarters, what we call division administrators. There's eight of them, and there's three regional ones, one for Eastern, one for the Northwest, and one for the Southwest part of the state, three regional, a lab, and Management Services, and then a headquarters, Air, Water, Waste. And they winnow out all those air, water tanks, the whole deal, into the policy packages that ultimately get put into our budget. And, you know, where I need to get in as the director, if there are ties that have to be broken or whatever, then I do that. So it is a, and I don't know what the formal presentation that our budget people have been working on to give to you on how our budget works. It's probably going to be more detailed than you're going to want, or we're probably going to end up having time for now. But we could probably give it to you anyway if it's in written form and you could look at it. But that hasn't really changed over time. The question becomes, really, should it change? Does it need, it hasn't, when we were all centralized in Portland, it was set up this way. And largely because that's the way the federal dollars come in, by the way. That's the driving factor here. The federal statutes are set up in silos like this, and they give the money to the states in the same way, air, water, waste. So it's, you're driven to develop your budget like that. The question becomes, now that we have these regional offices out there, should we somehow divide that up so, like in the water program, to use my example again, you have a lab budget just for water, you have a headquarters budget just for water, you have an eastern region budget for water, you have a western region budget for water, you have a northwest region. We have not done that. It would be, in my view, I'm not saying it's a bad idea, I haven't really looked at it, but I have a feeling, and Helen can tell me, that it would, there'd be a lot more complicated accounting, because the money comes like this, and then we're trying to figure out ways to divide it up into smaller. Basically, what you have to do is have three or four sets of those silos all around the state then, which could be done, but I have a feeling it would cost a lot to do that. Don't know, though.
Madam Chair, I think that Stephanie really hit the nail on the head when she talked about the federal funding. Back when environmental programs were first created, water quality was the first one, I believe. And so funding came down for water quality. And the first department, the first environmental agency here in Oregon was for water quality. And that's how the funding came in, and then air, and then. So as these regulations are passed, that's how the funding comes in, is for water quality, air quality, waste, cleanup. Doesn't make any sense when you're thinking of it from a community standpoint. So that's how our budget was constructed. That's how EPA's budget is constructed. Almost every state environmental agency's budget is constructed by those silos. Well, over time, we began to realize that that was not the best way to manage the environment, especially here in Oregon, and we needed to decentralize, and we needed to manage it from a community perspective. And so we did decentralize. But because of all of the way that all the funding comes in, and we do have 127 funding sources, we did leave our budget structure the same. Frankly, it would be great if we got a block grant from EPA and could say, okay, this much goes to Western Region, and this much goes to Eastern Region, and this much goes to Northwest Region, and you solve the problems that are most needed to be solved in your region. So, at any rate, it is very complex, and were we to give you a regional budget, we would need to have every regional budget divided up into those, probably, 127 funding sources.
One comment, Madam Chair. I don't think that this is a problem that generally funded agencies share.
Right.
I mean, the reason it is so complex is that we're, as you've seen during the 3 weeks we've been here, we're heavily other funded. We have all those different fee sources or other fund sources, each one of which has to be accounted for separately.
It's, frankly, the decentralized structure isn't easy to manage with this funding structure either. Excuse me, I just spoke up with that.
Well, I'm just kind of back in process here because we're down to 2 minutes of time. So what you're going to do is to bring some people in to talk to us about how the budget is structured in more detail than we've gotten.
Madam Chair, I believe we were responding to a request this committee had made at some point, which you might not want to make, I don't know, but we had our budget shop working on the presentation, but Helen and I would provide it to you. At some point over the last couple of weeks, you had asked, you'd expressed interest in knowing more about how our budget was structured, and that's what we've been working on. I do think we may be being overly optimistic to think we're going to get through the enforcement discussion and everything that at least we had on our list that you wanted to know more about tomorrow, get that all done tomorrow.
And I'm beginning to get the same picture here. So we would probably be prudent to move the enforcement discussion off to Thursday so that we would make sure that we'd have things enough time for this tomorrow. I find the structure of the budget very interesting, and the way that I'm looking at it is in the legislature's ability to control where it is in the silos that the money is spent. And so I do think that we should spend some time talking about that.
And Madam Chair, we will provide to you, we are in the process of breaking down for you, and I hope it's planned to be done tomorrow, the picture of where everything is, headquarters versus regions versus all of that, in some kind of a way that's relatively digestible.
It'd be better if we had enforcement tomorrow.
Helen is just saying that in terms of preparing all that information, it would actually probably work better for us to do enforcement tomorrow and wait for the other stuff till Thursday, if that works okay for you.
That would be fine.
Okay. All right, we'll plan on enforcement tomorrow, and then if we happen to get done with enforcement, we might be able to do a few other of these things on
sure.
the list.
Okay. Questions, comments, announcements? No further business before the committee. We'll adjourn and come back to you at 1:00 tomorrow.